and Levinson.
Prime Minister Shinzo Abe and his wife Akie have given a table runner adorned with golden embroidery to President Trump, who's known for his affinity for gold. Abe also gave Melania Trump a bracelet with Japanese motifs, and Abe gave presidential daughter and advisor Ivanka Trump a set of face brushes. More on these stories at townhall.com.
The views and opinions of shows on KCNR are those of the hosts, guests, and callers only, and do not necessarily reflect those of the staff, management, or advertisers of KCNR Radio.
Hello, my darlings, and welcome back to Radio Wasteland. Welcome back, because you were just here.
Yeah, that's
right. Is this what you were making fun of me for last week?
Yes. It just calls to mind this idea that people are just listening to the show on a constant feed and are just like, oh.
Yeah, you got to fake it till you make it. I am your host, Chauncey Haworth, and this Negator is my sidekick,
can,
Sean.
Can that be my title now?
Negator? Negator? Yeah.
Yeah.
You look like Megatron, only you're all, what's up, guys?
Yeah, basically Marvin the Robot from Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy.
Totally. Yeah. So I did something terrible on the way here. Mm. I feel kind of bad about it. Yeah.
First hit and run's the hardest.
It is. It was close. You know, okay, so... You know how when you're merging onto the freeway behind somebody who is slow?
Yes.
You really want to get past them. And the person behind you also really wants to get past you.
Right.
And so you merge onto the freeway, and then you go out to go around them, but this person behind you is already what my wife and I refer to as swooped you, and they swoop you and then come up along the side.
Okay, I can picture the situation.
So I was in mid-lane change when this guy swoops me. And he refuses to back off, and I end up getting back into my lane because I'm going to die.
Right, yeah.
And then I did the thing that that I feel kind of bad about.
Okay.
I flipped him the bird.
My goodness.
Well,
you know, what incarnation.
Well, I feel bad about this for two reasons, because after I flipped him the bird, he didn't, like, flip me off back, and I could tell, like,
he burst into tears.
Yeah, something to the effect of that. You know, like he knew he had made a mistake. And I had taken it to this aggressive level. Was one reason why I felt bad about it. The other reason why I felt bad about it was that in this day and age, I feel it's, like, a little irresponsible of me to do that with all the shadiness of people on the road. I'm just all, man, I just got so upset that I potentially started some Wild West fight with this, I don't know.
If we've listeners in, like, L.A. or something, you know, where flipping someone the bird while driving is just, like, waving.
Yeah, but that's where all the vehicle shootings are happening, aren't they?
Okay, that's a fair point that I didn't take into consideration when I said that. But, you know, I don't think Redding is going to become a Mad Max wasteland.
This is Redding. Statistically, the likelihood of this guy, you know, packing is,
it's quite high. That's true. Yeah. Yeah. Well, so you're saying you were worried for your own safety. The guy might pull
I wasn't necessarily, like, worried for my own safety, but I did realize how...
You're contributing to a culture of violence and aggression on the road.
Yeah,
I'm trying to work this out here.
Yeah,
why
yeah well,
is
you
problem.
Know, this is like a public group therapy. It's good.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I felt like here's this guy who overreacted. I flipped him off.
Right.
And then I was overreacting, potentially leading to him or somebody else overreacting. And really the bottom line is, who cares?
It's a cycle of violence.
It is a cycle of violence, yeah. And really, the bottom line is, who cares? I had plenty of time to get here. Yeah. You know, so I don't see what I was so upset about.
Well, the thing is, if he so-called swooped you, and you were the one who backed off because of you were afraid you were going to die,
yeah.
then that means that he is superior to you in terms of masculinity.
I did feel a little emasculated by the situation, you know. Felt pretty...
That's how I'm given to understand that.
Yeah.
So,
yeah, totally.
I think that's correct.
I thought about following him and then tackling him and doing some sort of, like, touchdown dance over the top of him.
Right.
Just to...
See, that would reclaim your honor, and your ancestors right, would be proud.
Right. You know, it's interesting that that reclaims your honor in American culture, you know. That's, you know, another, you know, you kill him or you commit Harry Carey or, you know, something kind of extreme. But here you, you know, you tackle him and do a football dance over the top.
Yeah. Yeah.
But he wasn't driving a big old truck.
Okay. So,
so I wasn't that emasculated.
Yeah.
There wasn't some sort of, I don't know how to put it on the radio, when
yeah.
they attach things that dangle from the backs of their trucks. There was none of that going
oh
on.
Oh, my God.
It was purely just a guy in some sort of green Subaru.
Sure.
So if you see a guy on the road in a green Subaru, man...
Kill him.
I'm sorry.
Oh.
I really am sorry. I feel bad about it. I don't know what I was doing. It's like...
Right. Well, but, you know, all jokes aside, I think a lot of time... guys are very sensitive about status and that kind of thing. You know, it's kind of weird to me, actually.
This is why I have a hard time fitting in with guys. I'll try to fit this in real quick. And so I'm young and I'm working at some sub shop, and like, this is before I had a beard. My wife wanted me to trim my beard off. And I'm telling this guy at work, and he's just all like, he's all, what? You're going to do what your woman tells you to do and blah, blah, blah. And I'm just all like, well, we are married, and chances are she's the only person I'm ever going to be with again in my life. So I would just assume she'd find me somewhat attractive.
Right. Yeah. Seems wise. Right.
Right. And it had nothing to do with, like, you know, all I thought was like, because, like, I am not a very manly guy, but I'm right. trapped in a body that looks pretty manly. You know, I'm bearded. I wear the... I don't know what this is. Cowboy flannel.
Right.
You know?
Well, I mean, I can understand that.
But it's funny. I personally, in my mind, am not a very manly guy.
Right.
But
yeah, well, you're preaching to the choir here. So.
All right. When we come back, we have ancient Incas.
Oh, yes.
That's a good topic. And the message for the takeaway before we go to commercial break is... Swooper, no swooping. Come on back, Radio Wasteland.
I'm at a baby, can't you see?
This is Alan Gordon, CEO of Coachmaster Collision. It's been 2 years since Don officially retired. Although his presence is missed, his legacy lives on through Coachmaster's personal service, quality-driven technicians, and pride in every job. If you've been in to see us in the last 20 years, then we've already met. I will continue to provide the personal and quality service that the North State has come to expect from Coachmaster. Coachmaster is and will continue to be the leader in advanced technology in the collision repair industry, including laser, 3D frame alignment, and computerized paint matching. After all, if we can't fix it, no one can.
Coachmaster Collision Repair continues to be the leader in the North State for advanced technology in the collision repair industry. From laser and 3D frame alignment machines and computerized paint matching technology to qualified technicians working on your vehicle. Remember Coachmaster on Eastside Road in Reading.
Linda and I live a pretty hectic life, and when we get away, we want to have a place that provides solitude and quiet. Well, we found that place, Cottage by the Sea, over in Smith River. Imagine a weekend away from all the concerns of your everyday life. Sunrise, sunsets, walk on a beach that is never crowded, privacy, quiet, and solitude. Cottage has full kitchen, hot tub, ocean views, and it's only a short drive to Brookings, Oregon if you want to go over there to the shops. Call Lori at 541-469-3414. That's Cottage by the Sea.
If the American people ever allow private banks to control the issuance of their currency, first by inflation, then by deflation, the banks and the corporations that will grow up around them will deprive the people of all their property until their children wake up homeless on the continent their fathers conquered.
We hold these truths to be self-evident, that all men are created equal, that they are endowed by their Creator with certain unalienable rights, that among these are life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. Revolution has started.
Sovereign Minds, now on Sundays, 10 to noon.
It is tough establishing a new business in California, and even tougher if you're trying to understand the multiple laws that seem to have no other reason but to make your life harder. How do you deal with those legal hurdles while trying to build this new business or expand an existing one? By having your own qualified expert assist you. Douglas Wright, attorney at law, specializes in business law and is well versed on the morass of legal questions facing a California business. Douglas Wright, a professional corporation, 530-243-6000 or douglaswrightlaw.com.
A brand new production of A Cascade Christmas is coming to Reading's historic Cascade Theater. It's Shasta County's theatrical holiday spectacular, returning to the stage for 2 weekends full of dancing, singing, snowflakes, and candy canes. It starts the day after Thanksgiving, an all-new show for the whole family, with evening and matinee performances, plus photos with Santa after each 2 p.m. show. Get your tickets now at 243-8877 or cascadetheater.org.
All right, welcome back to Radio Wasteland and our guest, Brian Forrester. Am I saying that correctly? I assume that I am, but you do have an interesting spelling of your first name.
Thank you.
Is it B-R-I-E-N?
That's right.
Yeah. So this is a topic that me personally, I'm really excited about because I kind of feel with all this paranormal stuff, that the one thing, you know, the few collections of things that we're actually probably going to find absolute truth of is going to lie either in the ocean, microbial life on Mars, or it's going to have to do with ancient history being not exactly what we thought it was. And so I'm really excited about having you on to talk about this.
I'm excited too, actually.
Thank you.
So our opening question normally is, you know, how did you get started in this? How did you go from almost Canada to Canada to the Incas?
I've always had a fascination with ancient mysteries and ancient enigmas and ancient cultures. And I started traveling when I was about 16 and have been to more than 90 countries. So I first decided to come to Peru about 13 years ago and was just blown away by the megalithic structures I saw and the fact that academics couldn't properly explain how they were made and who made them. So that is what began my journey here.
Yeah, another big question is why? You know, I'm always hearing the question of, like, how they were made and blah, 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 and everybody's arguing this, but it's like, ultimately, why? Why?
You don't ever wake up in the morning and be like, I want to build a pyramid.
Right. You know, people are, I mean, and we're looking at generational efforts if they were done by man. So, I mean, why? You know, why would you struggle so hard to build something you might not ever see, you know? So, you know, the thing that's always really excited me about the Americas is that it seems like in the news every couple of years, mainstream science comes out and says that the Americas were colonized several thousand years earlier than we thought they were. And then a couple of years goes by and then they come out and say that again. And so I, you know, it's like really kind of amazing how far back it's creeping. So, you know, can you give us a little background on that, on what you're thinking of the original colonization of South America?
Well, I find it very hard to believe that all of the people of North America, Central America, and South America crossed the Siberian land bridge in order to get here. It's, you know, it's a huge land mass if you combine all three Americas together. And so that's why you do find enigmatic structures that could not have been built, for example, by the Inca, because in some cases the megalithic structures would be incredibly difficult for us today to construct using electricity and modern power tools. So how could a Bronze Age culture have possibly done this high precision work? And the answer is they couldn't. We also find catastrophic damage at most of the locations, indicating that there was a cataclysmic event thousands upon thousands of years ago. So that's why I'm pursuing this.
And do we have any insight as to what that cataclysmic event might have been?
Yeah, I recently wrote a book called Aftershock that looked at a number of different theories. And all of the theory, or the four major theories that I've been able to look at, have some good overlapping in that they state that there was a cataclysmic event that happened about 11,700 years ago, was global. It also corresponded with the end of the last ice age, which was incredibly rapid. It didn't take thousands of years to melt the ice. Robert Schock, the geologist, believes that the world's oceans could have risen by more than 300 feet in 2 weeks.
Well, that is definitely not natural planet warming, you know, and it seems to me like every time there's a, when we look back in history, all these things seem to coincide right at the end of the last ice age. And really each time something coincides with it, you know, I find it a little less coincidental. You know, they're just all, society started at the last, civilization started at the end of the last ice age. But then all these other things happen, and it's just a little too coincidental.
Yeah, that's true. The conventional story is that the actual rise of actual civilizations, like Sumeria, the Indus Valley, Egypt, and China, happened maybe 6,000 years ago. But what seems to be happening, or what we're seeing, is that there was a global cataclysm about 12,000 years ago, and that caused a great die-off of plant life and humanity, etc. And then it took another 6,000 years for people to be able to coalesce again in major groups. So the so-called beginning of civilization that they talk about is the Renaissance, or the rebirth of humanity as a sophisticated societies, rather than the first time.
Yeah, so... Maybe for our listeners, you can explain to us the locations of the Inca as opposed to the Aztec and the Maya, because I think a lot of us maybe get confused on where they're at.
No, that's a good point. The Aztecs were basically in the area of present-day Mexico City and its environs. The Maya were more closer to the Gulf of Mexico, to the southeast and then into Guatemala and Honduras. And then the Inca, at the height of their civilization, stretched from the middle of Chile and, basically Chile, and then up north through Bolivia and Peru and Ecuador and the southern part of Colombia. So there likely wasn't any interaction between the Inca and the Maya or the Aztec.
I see. And where do the Olmec fit into this?
The Olmecs are actually older than the Maya, and they also lived on the coastal area of the Gulf of Mexico.
I see. So what is the oldest Inca structure that we know of? And maybe you could give us mainstream science's view and now what we're starting to think.
Sure. Well, it's generally believed that the Inca developed in the area of Lake Titicaca, which half of it's in Peru, half of it's in Bolivia, probably somewhere around 100 AD. And then over the course of about 900 to 1,000 years, they established their civilization, became reasonably sophisticated culturally, and then they were driven out because of a climate change event that lasted 40 years. They were forced to move north, and that's when they found the city of Cusco, which became their capital in the highlands of Peru. And they existed there until they were basically destroyed by the Spanish around 1533 AD.
And so I don't know. What is our guess at this point as to how they built these megaliths?
Well, they couldn't have built the megaliths because they were at the very best of Bronze Age culture. We see no improvement in their tool technology from 100 AD up until 1532. So there was no evolution in technology whatsoever. And all of the megalithic works are made out of incredibly hard stone like granite and basalt. And if you try to shape granite and basalt with a bronze chisel, it just makes the chisel bend. So they
basically, you shape bronze with granite. And not well, the other
you
way around.
So what I believe and others believe is that the Inca found an abandoned megalithic city that had been destroyed in the distant past, and because they were blown away at the sophistication of the stone structures, they decided to make their capital city there.
I see. So you know, there's a lot of thoughts behind who built them. There's a lot of angles of ancient aliens or ancient man. Are you leaning one way or the other on that?
Well, it was either a lost ancient civilization that somehow disappeared, or it had to be some kind of life from off planet because again, some of these structures would be very difficult to create in the 21st century. So if it's beyond our technology, and we supposedly are the highest level of technical civilization at this point in throughout human history, then I think you have to entertain the idea that it could have been people or beings from another planet.
All right. Well, we are coming up on break. We got a lot more questions for you. You're listening to Brian Forrester here on Radio Wasteland. Come on back. A mí no me chinga el vato, ni me pone cabartolo. A mí no me asusta el gringo, el que me busca se la acabó. Ya llegó, Super Chango.
Ya llegó Super Chango, ya llegó If you are running your own business, you already know that if there are 1,000 items on your to-do list, you really have 3,000 things to get done. Success in business is in the details. You need help. Let the smart professionals at Five Star Bank help you take care of those financial details. Yes, smart people doing good business. Life is 10% of what happens to us and 90% of how we react to it. Be positive. Those at the top of the mountain did not fall there. Visit us at Five Star Bank and let us show you how we specialize in emerging business and commercial real estate. Five Star Bank also specializes in hard work, working hard for those that believe that success is just on the other side of the next opportunity. Thomas Jefferson was a great believer in opportunity, for he found that the harder he worked, the more he had of it. Your time is as valuable as your success. So visit us at Five Star Bank, 358 Hartnell in Reading, or call Eric Woodstrom at 223-6652. Online at fivestarbank.com. Five Star Bank, professional, progressive, and personal. Member FDIC, Equal Housing Lender.
Hi, I'm Sharon Clark of Home Helpers. It's amazing to look back at all the families we've touched since 2004, but our clients say it best.
I want to express my deep appreciation for the love and support you and your...
So fortunate to have an organization like Home Helpers.
You never know how much your contribution meant or how greatly you touched our lives.
Thank you so much for helping me care for my husband.
After hearing what it's meant to them, I truly can't imagine doing anything else. When you need help for your loved one, choose Home Helpers. There is no place like home.
I think one great benefit to having a Turtle Bay membership, I love that it's one place we can go to and bring our family, and there's something for everybody. There's activities for our one-year-old to do, and there's also exhibits and things for our six-year-old to do, and it's just a good variety of things for all ages.
We're members of Turtle Bay because I think education is really important, and I think kids need to learn that they can learn out of the classroom and learn in real life, and I think Turtle Bay brings that experience to them as they can see things that they see out and about outside of school and learn something.
Joe's Web Geeks are the geeks your business has been looking for. Now businesses in Shasta County have a resource to make online advertising easy. With our Jumpstart service, you can get a website with pages built to be found in search, a Facebook page, listings in over 25 directories, and a lot more for $8.99. Let Joe's Web Geeks help you so that you can get back to doing what you do best. Visit joeswebgeeks.com or call 515-9851.
This Chamber of Commerce Minute is brought to you by Maui Bob's Office Cleaning.
Are you tired of worrying if your business will survive till the economy gets better? Worry no more. The Greater Reading Chamber of Commerce has the tools to help you with your small business. From valuable networking events to educational seminars, we are here in your community. People do business with people they know. Get closer to your future customers by joining the Reading Chamber of Commerce today. As a member, you will participate in referral programs, member-to-member discounts, free listing on the Chamber website, and your company name listed in our business directory with a distribution of 5,000 copies to potential customers. Call us at 225-4433 to find out how you can meet your new customers and build your business.
This moment's been brought to you by Maui Bob's Office Cleaning, professional cleaning services, 221-5868. Why not get the best? A jewel of the North State, a place we love to go and love being members.
The view, the best in the North State, from the restaurants, meeting rooms, and of course on the award-winning 18-hole golf course, Riverview Golf and Country Club. It's the place to belong.
Go in and meet the friendly staff today or go to their website at riverviewgolf.net and find out about their introductory memberships.
Riverview Golf and Country Club, corporate, social, tennis, fitness, and golf. Get it all. Become a member.
It's affordable and fun. Riverview Golf and Country Club.
All right, welcome back to Radio Wasteland and our guest, Brian Forster. We are talking about the Incas and ancient megaliths and basically the colonization of South America and how exactly that happened. You know, so just to give people an idea, how big of stones are we talking when it comes to some of the larger megaliths?
Well, the larger ones in the Inca world are at a wall called Sacsayhuaman above Cusco, and some of those stones weigh 125 tons.
125 tons. So just to kind of put that into perspective, 125 tons is 101-ton pickups.
Right.
I mean, basically. 125.
And what is the mainstream scientific view of how these were transported?
That they actually moved them on wooden rollers with ropes. And the problem is that there are no trees, or there were no trees in pre-Columbian, the pre-Columbian area, or during the time of the Incas that grow straight. The largest trees are basically bushes that grow with twists and turns in the trunk. And so they had no material, at least in terms of wood, to be able to be flat to create rollers out of. Also, it rains 6 months of the year in Cusco, so at least half of the time, the weight of the stone itself would partially sink into the ground.
Yeah, that is amazing. So,
yeah, that's hard to get around.
It has always been hard for me to get around. You know that. Well, the way I like to look at it is that, you know, by conservative estimate, you know, we're about, as the human beings you look at today, we're about 200,000 years old. And society, civilization started about 6,000. Let's even make it easy for the math. It started about 10,000 years ago. And so if in that span we got to here, it's hard for me to believe in the previous 190,000 years, nobody built a city.
Just playing with sticks and eating bananas, you know.
Yeah, and so I have been amazed by this ever since I was a little kid. So how old? So you gave us the conservative mainstream view of the cities, but how old do we think these cities would have to be for the Incas to have found them?
Well, I'm saying at least 12,000, because that's the that's the time of the cataclysm. So unfortunately, we can't get a more specific date. I can't tell you that we've had more than one geologist with us looking at these, and based on the weathering of the stone, they've stated clearly that the weathering itself is thousands or several thousand years old. And since the Inca only lived in that area for about 600 years, you know, going back 1,000 years, the geologists confirmed that these structures have to be several times as old as the Inca civilization.
Hmm. Well, even in that time frame, you know, with us looking at the rest of the world for things, shouldn't we have found other examples of people being there prior?
Yeah, well, actually, that's why we travel to different parts of the world. We believe also that in Egypt, the Great Pyramid and some of the other structures there are also at least 12,000 years old, and were found by the Pharaonic people about 5,000 years ago. When you go to Turkey, you see incredible underground cities that were constructed that were likely done thousands upon thousands of years ago. We have Baalbek in Lebanon, Petra in Jordan, and some other locations on the planet.
And so with these structures in South America, are we, you know, a lot of what I read and see is that the stones on the bottom are obviously older, but drastically older than the stones on top. Are we seeing that in South America as well?
Yeah, definitely. Not only older, but larger. You find the largest stones are the foundation. So if you even go to a site like Machu Picchu, which is, of course, world famous, you'll see that about 10% of it is megalithic. And so that's another site that the Inca found, abandoned and destroyed, and they rebuilt on top. And the contrast between the construction techniques are vastly different. The Inca work is small stones, roughly shaped, and glued together with basically a type of local clay, but the megalithic stones interlock with each other. Again, you're looking at stones weighing upwards of 40-plus tons.
Yeah, and in the case of Machu Picchu, on top of a hill.
A mountain.
On top of a mountain, So it's safe to say that not only are these old, but they're potentially two cities old, back from when the Incas occupied them.
We actually see two forms of ancient construction. So it's possible either two different high-tech civilizations were involved, or that they changed their techniques over time.
So when the Inca move in, do they view this as a gift from the gods?
On some level, they obviously noticed that somebody had been there who was much more technically proficient than they were. And Cusco means the navel, as in the navel of their world. So I think they established Cusco as their capital because of the mind-blowing stonework they found there.
So other than the difficulty of building these massive, massive stones, what other proof or leading clues do we have that's leading us to believe that these people did not build these things? You know, there has to be some proof outside of that, maybe in their own lore and legends or something like that.
Well, unfortunately, the Catholic Church and the Spanish conquistadors tried their very best to wipe out all Inca knowledge. The Inca had a writing system called the quipu, which was a series of knotted cords. And so the Spanish and Catholic Church burnt them wherever they found them, trying to eradicate the history of the people. But if you spend time with local experts in Cusco, you do find out that there still is oral tradition talking about very advanced civilizations having lived there prior to the time of the Inca, and also the locations of the quarries, because each megalithic structure is always made of the same type of stone. They didn't mix different types of stone together. So in the case of one structure that is green granite, the quarry is about 2 miles away, but most of the work that was done was in basalt, and the basalt quarry is 45 miles away.
Yeah, that doesn't seem very practical unless you absolutely have a way that you know that you're going to move those things.
That's right.
Yeah. So, okay, so clearly, like, I have a hard time envisioning us handling a project of that magnitude today. I mean, I don't know, maybe we could, but that's, it would be a lot of expense, and certainly. How advanced are we thinking that these ancient civilizations were exactly? And I know we don't know. I mean, we can't know, but.
Well, in the case of the Cusco area, the interesting thing is I recently had an engineer from Australia with me, and he believes that they were able to manipulate energy to such an extent that they were able to turn solid stone almost into plasticine. And that's why you get the complicated polygonal shapes, because they literally somehow, through energy, were able to make the stone moldable temporarily, and then it reset back into its solid form again. And that's way beyond our level of technology.
Yeah, I've seen some of this. It's like they made Play-Doh blocks and put them together. It's like they were melted into place in order to somewhat oblong shapes that still fit together perfectly. You know, does mainstream science have an argument for that?
Well, I don't think mainstream science does, but this particular engineer was thinking of outside of the box. And a lot of these stones have these protrusions, almost like knobs on them. And he believes that that's where the energy was actually injected into the stone. He thinks that the stone was roughly cut, and then a row of these large blocks would be put into place, roughly fitting, and then somehow they were able to energize, not necessarily heat the stone, but energize it and turn it into almost marshmallow material. Then once that row had set, then they would do the next section above it.
Well, it definitely has that marshmallow kind of look. You're listening to Radio Wasteland. We're going to commercial break. You're listening to Brian Forrester, and we're talking about the ancient Inca and how exactly did they do what they did. Come on back.
The average adult is issued 32 troopers that, with proper care and just a little discipline, should serve you well during your entire tour of duty on this planet. They're called your teeth. But when your platoon gets out of line, holes in the formation, or other problems, you need to call in an expert, like General, Dr. William Farrell, with decades of experience keeping those troops in line and executing their assigned duties properly and dependably. If you'd rather not be there while he reestablishes order amongst the troops, Dr. Farrell offers sedation dentistry. He and his highly trained staff will whip your troops into shape without any discomfort. And having served himself in both the Navy and the Marine Corps, Dr. Farrell offers special consideration to veterans. Let him take the best care of your platoon of teeth, and they will serve you always. Call 547-5757 or visit palosidrodentistry.com. At ease.
Your insurance does not roll over at the end of the year. It's important that you use this benefit. Ask Dr. Farrell how you can best apply your insurance for your dental needs by calling 547-5757.
Founded in 1995, GI Pathology is the only physician-owned laboratory in the United States dedicated solely to the practice of gastrointestinal and liver pathology. The company provides the highest quality GI pathology diagnosis made exclusively by one of our fellowship-trained gastrointestinal and liver pathologists. GI Pathology delivers results to its Northern California client base within an industry-leading 24 hours. Call 888-2-GI-PATH or go to www.gipath.com for more information.
Cold weather is quickly approaching Northern California. Give SST Oil a call today to hear their competitive prices for home heating fuel. Veterans are offered a 5% discount on heater sales and services and a 5% discount on home heating fuels. That's SST Oil. Give them a call at 241-1167. That's 241-1167. SST Oil. SST Oil supports our veteran community.
Hi, I'm Brian Martin, General Manager at River Commons Senior Living, formerly known as River Oaks Retirement Community. A new name, but the same caring staff, engaged residents, and beautiful community with a new family-run ownership. The goal of the new owners is to carry on the philosophy of always doing the right thing and creating an engaged and caring environment for both the residents and the staff, while preserving the distinguished designation of Best Retirement Community in the North State 7 years in a row. River Commons is a warm, relaxed, carefree environment where the freedoms from daily chores allows you the opportunity to enjoy companionship and time for the things you enjoy the most. Call today for a tour or luncheon a tour and ask me how you can have us pay for your move or how you can save $1,000 when you move in. River Commons Senior Living, 301 Hartnell Avenue, or check out our website at river-commons.com.
Welcome back to Radio Wasteland and our guest, Brian Forrester. We're talking about the ancient Incas. You know, there seems to be a big clash between archaeology and geology. And a lot of people researching ancient pasts seem to be going to geologists instead of archaeologists. And I'm assuming that's due to drastic pushback or just straight up ignoring them. Do you find that you get pushback when trying to get support or scientific backup?
Not as much anymore. I used to, but since I'm able to surround myself with archaeologists and stonemasons and engineers and people like that, then we're building up a very big collection of evidence and data. Archaeology, on some level, is not a hard science. It's a social science, and geology is science. Physics is science. So when you deal with actual scientists themselves, then that's when you get a more logical interpretation of things rather than suppositions.
Yeah, it kind of seemed like through the 90s, maybe the early 2000s, we were dealing with a hard-lined, absolutely not attitude out of mainstream science. But then since then, it seems like scientists are a little more eyebrow raised, maybe attitude. For me to notice it, the scientist that comes to mind is Michiru Kaku. You know, when you bring up strange things to him, he's always somewhat open-minded to the idea. There seems to have been a big change in science being open-minded to this. Do you think it has a lot to do with researchers like you getting hard science backing up what they're doing and kind of putting it in their face and saying, explain this?
Basically, I don't tend to push stuff into people's faces anymore. I just present the evidence.
That was my poetic way of saying it. I'm sure you're nice about it.
Sure. But, you know, thankfully we have the internet, so you can automatically send information all around the planet. You don't need to go through something like peer review, which tends to be like a boy and girls club of people who have an agreement about what history was. And so that way, and of course, taking a multidisciplinary approach means that you're looking at any subject matter like this from many different angles.
Right. So they seem to be getting more open to it, and society is getting more open to it. What do you think it would take for science to say, yes, there's something to this, and it's textbook worthy, it's teaching worthy? What's it going to take for education to do that?
I think we have to look at the younger generations that are just starting to have a look at this. People who have had a 40-year career and believe, for example, that Cheops was the one who built the Great Pyramid, they're never going to change their mind. They're going to retire and play golf, and that's probably the best thing for them. It's better to leave it in the hands of people who have an education but not that much experience, and hopefully they're inquisitive enough to be able to look at some of this material.
So you think that basically there's not going to be a physical find, but a general consensus from the next generation?
Yeah, I think as the data and other evidence builds up a stronger and stronger case, then eventually the academics will have to start looking at it, because the general public will start asking them questions about why is it that you believe this when we have evidence of that?
Yeah, and that's always something that kind of troubled me, is that, you know, when things are put in front of them, I don't need an explanation. I don't know will suffice. But we tend to not really get I don't know. You know, there's been a lot of discussion about this. Do you think it's a career protecting thing, or just sort of like a dogma protecting thing?
It's both. It's a career protecting thing, a dogma protecting thing, a paradigm protecting thing. Also, of course, you see that most archaeologists, etc., publish their work in journals that only other archaeologists look at. Once in a while, you'll get something, for example, put on in National Geographic or something of that nature. But now that we have the internet, it's possible to broadcast to 7 billion people.
Right. Unfortunately, it's on the internet also, which is, you know, also known for broadcasting a bunch of BS.
There is that.
So do you find that that within the circle that believes that this may be the case, do you find that there's a fair amount of opposition there about what they think the situation is? Because surely people are jumping to conclusions. Do you find that people in the circle are butting heads? Politely.
Oh yeah, definitely. I mean, you do. Some people think that all so-called alternative researchers are great friends and get along, but people have their own pet theories and suppositions. And so what I try to do is back up all of the things that I do with actual data, rather than saying, you know, my theory is this necessarily. So you get a lot of that, but in the way, in the end, reality will rule.
Yeah, that is absolutely true. You know, do you think that we'll, you know, I realize we're kind of beating this question to death, but
Do you think science will ever let us know for sure, or do you think we're just putting together pieces and we'll have assumptions for the rest of time? Because as every year goes by, you know, proof is falling apart. Proof is falling back into dirt. Do you think that we'll ever truly know?
Oh, yeah. Actually, step by step, we're learning, and that's what's wonderful about modern technology. Like a smartphone with the right, you know, you can take that into the field with the right apps. Right now, I'm doing a lot of work at an ancient megalithic site called Pumapunku in Bolivia, and there we're finding magnetic anomalies thanks to apps like magnetometers and even a simple compass. And that's something that the archaeologists have not even looked at. So that adds another layer of complexity. Was the magnetism something that was utilized in the transport of the stone? Was it also utilized in the way that the stone was shaped? So that's, I don't think we have to depend upon academics so much anymore. A PhD is, you know, is education, but it's basically a piece of paper. When you have people like me that spend much more time out in the field studying this stuff than they do, and I have a lot of different people working with me, then I think that's where the answers are definitely coming.
Well, we're coming up on the end of the show, unfortunately. An hour flies by rather quickly. How can people find out more about you, about your tours, and about your books?
Everything is on my website, hiddenincatours.com, and 90% of the content is free.
Oh, well, that's great. Hiddenincatours.com, and I assume you're also on social media?
Yeah, I have a YouTube channel. I've got 930 YouTube videos. I'm on Facebook, and that's more or less it. I don't bother with Twitter so much because I like to send photos and video rather than little text messages.
Right. So Hidden Inca Tours, let me squeeze this in. Is that something that people can sign up for tours? Are you giving tours?
Yeah, my wife and I do about 20% of our time is tours. We're actually at the saturation point. We don't want to do more than that, but we do have scheduled tours to Egypt and Peru and Bolivia and Easter Island. And then also we do private tours for people as well.
Well, that sounds awesome. All right. Thank you very much for being on the show. You've been listening to Brian Forrester here on Radio Wasteland. Thanks for checking us out.
Thank you.
Mama was queen of the mambo, papa was king of the Congo. Deep down in the jungle, I start banging my first bongo. Every monkey like to be in my place instead of me, cause I'm the king of bongo, baby, I'm the king of bongo bong. I went to the big town where there is a lot of sound, from the jungle to the city looking for a bigger crown. So I play my bongo for the people of big city, but they don't go crazy when I'm banging on my boogie. I'm the
king of the bongo.
Hear me when I come, baby.
King of the bongo, king of the bongo.
Nobody like to be in my place instead of me, cause nobody go crazy when I'm banging on my boogie. I'm a king without a crown, hanging loose in a big town. But I'm a king of bongo, baby. I'm the king of bongo bong.
King of the bongo, king of the bongo.
Hear me when I come, baby.
King of the bongo.
Hear me when I come. They say that I'm a clown, making too much dirty sound. They say there is no place for little monkey in this town. Nobody like to be in my place instead of me, cause nobody go crazy when I'm banging on my boogie. I'm the
king of the bongo.
Hear me when I come, baby.
King of the bongo.
Hear me when I come. Banging on my bongo, all that swing belongs to me. I'm so happy there's nobody in my place instead of me. I'm a king without a crown, hanging loose in a big town. I'm the king of bongo, baby, I'm the king of bongo bong.
King of the bongo, king of the bongo.
Hear me when I come, baby.
King of the bongo, king of the bongo.
Hear me when I come. Mama was queen of the mambo, papa.
The news is brought to you on KCNR, Shasta, Redding, by Tobacco and Brew. Come see their newly remodeled store at 2143 Hilltop Drive in Redding. Tobacco and Brew, open 7 days a week.
Massacre that killed 26 people and injured 20 others. Pastor Frank Pomeroy was not at the church in Sutherland Springs, but lost his 14-year-old daughter in the shooting, says it's been a difficult time.
We have we've had a long night with our children and grandbabies we have left.
Pastor Pomeroy claims he's leaning on Christ to get through the shooting that took so many of his congregation.
Whatever life brings to you, lean on the Lord rather than your own understanding. I don't understand.